You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
From the depths of the sea, this is Transmissions from Atlantis, a sci-fi, fantasy, and horror podcast with a special emphasis on Doctor Who. Featuring the creators of Seekers of the Lost Worlds, Rita and J.C. Delatorre.
Hi, I'm J.C. Delatorre.
And I'm Rita Delatorre.
And this is episode 139 of Transmissions from Atlantis. Now, if you're watching us on YouTube, you're going to start searching our channel for other episodes. Until now, Transmissions from Atlantis has been an audio-only podcast. But tonight, that changes.
For 2018, we wanted to do more for our YouTube and Vimeo channels, and we hope you'll enjoy seeing us in our element here in the Atlantis Library and talking about the things we love. Of course, our dedicated podcast listeners can still listen to the same way they always have, and we hope you still enjoy it.
Speaking of which, we have a great show for you this week. We'll be talking Star Wars, The Last Jedi, and the Doctor Who Christmas special, and give you a retrospective on the careers of both Stephen Moffat and Murray Gold, while also giving you some thoughts on Peter Capaldi's run as the Doctor.
Also in our Rapid Fire segment, we talk The Walking Dead, Lucifer, the season finale of The Orville, The Return of the X-Files, the Netflix original Bright starring Will Smith, plus our full review of Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle. We did a brief review last episode, but this one we'll have our full one, and we'll also talk Wrinkle in Time.
Another thing we wanted to mention is that we officially wrapped our production of our film, Seekers of the Lost World, and we're now applying for our film festivals and still looking for distribution. So we're excited to be moving on to this next chapter.
Yep, and in addition, we'd like to wish you a very happy new year, and we hope your holidays were fun and safe.
Definitely. All right, so let's get it going with rapid fire. Fire! Okay, rapid fire. Let's start with The Walking Dead.
Well, we are officially making the announcement that we're no longer watching The Walking Dead because it sucks.
You know, it's been rough for me because I'm a huge Walking Dead fan. I own all the previous seasons, but it's gotten to the point where it's just, I've lost my love of it.
And you know me, I've lost my love of it about, what, two seasons ago?
Now, of course, for those of you that are watching us on YouTube for the first time, we usually put spoilers when we're talking about spoilers, so here's a spoiler warning.
Spoilers!
You know, with Carl being killed, I don't know. To me, it just doesn't make sense.
Where the show has been taken, I'm just not liking where it's going, and unfortunately, I've just lost all interest in it to the point where we used to watch it live, and now we don't.
I think it's the production values, really. I mean, I think the production values have just kind of fallen apart.
I agree, and unfortunately, we're just not going to really be covering it anymore.
Yeah.
All right, so next up, we're going to talk Lucifer. This past week's episode was a filler episode, but it was a really good filler episode because it was a flashback episode.
Yeah, it was almost like an origin story of Lucifer coming to Los Angeles, so that was kind of cool. And of course, leading up to this episode, we found out about Cain.
Spoilers! Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, okay, so the big police captain is an immortal.
Yeah, I knew that there was something up with that police captain. I thought personally that he was evil, but it doesn't surprise me that there was something crazy going on with him. I didn't expect it to be Cain.
No, I didn't either. Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see where the show's going to go. The beginning of the season I thought was a little slow. We weren't getting a lot of that supernatural aspects to it, but now that's starting to pick up again, and I'm finding it more enjoyable.
Yeah, even the filler episode, if you really think about it, was all supernatural.
Yeah, we saw how she became a detective.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I thought it was really, really good.
And, of course, the classic scene was Lucifer sitting on the couch getting ready to do his business to Chloe's video.
Yeah.
Okay. Alrighty then. Alright, let's return to the X-Files. I don't know about you, but I'm thrilled about the X-Files coming back.
I am too, especially since the last one left off at a bit of a cliffhanger. Mm-hmm. But I'm also sad to learn that she is not planning on coming back and doing more.
That's right. Gillian Anderson says that this is her last run as Dana Scully on the X-Files. And I'm sorry, folks. If Dana Scully is not part of the X-Files, then there is no X-Files, because did we learn nothing from Doggett?
Yeah. You know, Mulder went away, and he eventually had to come back because that's what the fans wanted.
And I think Jillian, didn't she leave for like a pregnancy or something for a little while? And
she did, but that was understandable. That was more maternity.
Yeah. And those were some of the worst X-Files episodes that were
around. I agree. I mean, we love that it came back, but, you know, after just two seasons, she wants to leave again? I'm like, come on now.
Well, here's the thing that bothered me about last season's X-Files, and it's that they just kind of threw out all the mythology of the X-Files and didn't follow any of it. So hopefully they'll bring some of that back in and make sense out of the new version of the X-Files.
And who knows, maybe she'll change her mind.
Yep, maybe.
Next up is the new Netflix original, Bright.
Yes.
We originally thought it was going to be a TV series, but nope, it's a film starring Will Smith.
And...
well,
I don't know. What do you think of Bright?
As a movie, yes, it was entertaining, but I felt this show would have made a much better television series.
I mean, I hearken it to Alien Nation, kind of like Alien Nation meets Lord of the Rings kind of thing.
Yes, exactly.
And I loved Alien Nation. I loved the concept of Alien Nation. I loved the show Alien Nation. The problem that I just kind of have with it is Bright didn't kind of hit me like that. It was just kind of there.
There was no real character development.
Well, there was a little bit of development with the orc guy.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, there wasn't enough world building. We get this understanding that this is how this world has been forever. But I don't know. It just seems to be weird. They didn't do enough of that.
I mean,
they didn't do enough explanation.
Yeah, and you also visit Elfland, and Elfland, you're there for 2 seconds.
You drive through it.
Yeah.
So enough said.
It was very odd.
All right. Next, we're gonna give a proper spoiler-filled review of Jumanji: Welcome to the Jungle. We got to see it a couple weeks before the movie came out, and let me tell you, it was better than the original film, folks. Not to knock Robin Williams, but I love him. But The Rock, Jack Black, Karen Gillian, and what's the other dude's name?
Oh, Kevin Hart. Sorry.
Yeah, Kevin Hart.
Kevin Hart.
They had such amazing chemistry on screen. And the fact that you got to see a whole other aspect of the film, instead of, you know, being outside and playing the game, they got sucked into the game. But the movie was hilarious, folks.
Hilarious. We laughed from the start of it to the very end of it. It was an excellent job by the entire crew, and the special effects were great. The story was actually really well written. I give it high marks. I give it full 10.
Me too. Yeah. It's going to be an instant buy for us,
yes,
for sure.
Absolutely. Okay, last on Rapid Fire is A Wrinkle in Time trailer.
Now, the movie's coming out in March, and the latest trailer that we saw, it's just, oh my God, I cannot wait to see this film.
I can't remember the last time Oprah Winfrey was in a movie. Was it The Color Purple?
Oh, no. She's done other things since then. But it might have been a while. She just doesn't do film often.
She doesn't have to. She's Oprah.
Yeah, she's Oprah. Right? But she is an amazing actress, you know, when it comes down to it, when she does actually get on screen. And I have a feeling this is not going to be any different. She is probably going to be brilliant. The entire film looks like it's genius. Not just visually. The story is going to be amazing. I know it is. I grew up reading A Wrinkle in Time. I've seen a different adaptation of the film.
Mm-hmm.
That was okay. I think it was a made-for-TV film.
Yeah, I think so.
And it was okay, but this is going to take it to a whole other level.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of the book as well. I loved reading it when I was a kid. And I just love the entire story. I think it's a fun story, and I'm looking forward to it. And that does it for Rapid Fire. Coming up next, we talk Star Wars: The Last Jedi.
ESO. 7 years of keeping it really geeky.
Hey! What are you trying to do? You ruined my record, man. I just bought it.
Hey, you guys!
How exciting. Spoilers.
It's 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Bye-bye, boys.
Have fun storming the castle.
Think it'll work?
It would take a miracle.
Bye-bye.
The Earth Station 1 podcast. It's time to let your inner geek out to play. You can find them at www.earthstation1.com or up on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Peace, and we're done.
Alright, folks, so like the rest of the world, we went to see the latest Star Wars film, The Last Jedi.
Twice, in fact.
The film has had a lot of controversy, or controversy, as they say in Britain, I guess, I don't know. Anyway, with Star Wars fans, this will be a spoiler-filled discussion, so if you haven't seen The Last Jedi yet and don't want to be spoiled, move on to later in this episode, because we're going to talk specifics.
Spoilers!
So, what was your thoughts on The Last Jedi?
Better than The Force Awakens, for starters.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot more character development in this film. And this was Luke's film.
Yes.
The Force Awakens introduced a series of new characters, you know, between Poe, Rey, and Finn. And now we're still delving into some of the Jedi mythology in this film.
Yeah, and they really didn't leave their story to be told. Or what I'm talking about is the old characters, you know, like Luke and Leia and Han and everybody. There wasn't a lot of room left after they basically introduced the new characters for the old characters to really have their moment. But I thought the big difference in The Last Jedi was this is the old series folks' film. You know what I mean?
Yeah, this film was a little bit Empire, and it was also a little bit Return of the Jedi. So if those were some of your favorite Star Wars films, then The Last Jedi is going to hit the mark for you.
Yeah, and I found it really interesting, the controversy that's kind of come up in regards to the film, where it got a really crappy Rotten Tomatoes score from the fans. And I'm not understanding it. What do you think that? Why do you think that is?
I just don't know. I think part of it has to do with the one scene where Leia gets sucked out into space, for example, and she used the Force to save herself and get herself back onto the ship. Okay, I don't see a problem with that. Just because she's not an adamant Force wielder like Luke doesn't mean that she can't do it.
And not only that, she's never been trained in the Force either. You know, like Luke has at least formally been trained by, Obi-Wan and Yoda, so.
Yeah, but at the same time, if you're in crisis mode, you know, things can kick in. I mean, when somebody gets, you know, trapped underneath a car, adrenaline can
do amazing things.
Do amazing things with people lifting up cars.
Yeah, I hear what you're
saying. So I'm thinking Leia just had an adrenaline rush and a little bit of the Force kicked in for her.
Yeah, another one of the big complaints that I heard about was in regards to the scene where the female admiral has the light speed and light speeds through the
Star Destroyers. Oh, yes, yes, yes.
I personally thought it was a very cool scene, and there was that whole few seconds that where there was just no sound at all. I thought cinematically and visually it was one of the more thought-provoking and powerful scenes of the film.
It was actually my favorite scene out of the entire film. And yeah, the whole controversy behind that is that some theaters had to put up signs that saying, yes, there is a scene in the film where there's going to be 10 seconds of silence, and that was done on purpose.
Well, no, that's not what the controversy was. The controversy was more in regards to that Star Wars fans thought it was a stupid scene to see light speed used as a weapon.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought it was brilliantly done.
It was interesting. Now, I'm not going to say The Last Jedi was perfect. It definitely had some flaws. Like, for example, if you're in space, right, and you're being propelled into space, you don't run out of gas.
That is true, because if you're in space, once you're in motion, you don't stop. You just keep going until you collide with something.
Right. So the whole, you know, they ran out of fuel and started floating backwards kind of thing, that didn't make much sense.
Another thing that people had issues with in regards to the film was the whole casino scene. People were thinking that it was completely irrelevant.
No, actually, it's very important, right?
It is, and let me explain why. Up to this point, Finn isn't really part of the Rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
He's just there because he wants to protect Rey and nothing else. Because
he's got the big crush on Rey,
Exactly. He was going to run away, not because he was a coward, but because he wanted to go protect Rey.
Right.
Correct, right? When he went to that casino and he saw the corruption and the darkness surrounding him, that's when, in his mind, he finally decided, okay, this is why I need to join the Rebellion. I need to stop the Empire's corruption.
Yep.
And that's why, you know, towards the end of the film, when, you know, Captain Phasma calls him, "You scum," he replied with, Rebel scum.
Yes.
That's when he had made the conscious choice to join the Rebellion. Yep. So that's why the casino scene is so important.
Yep. And of course, everybody was talking about Luke's story arc.
Spoilers!
And a lot of the fans were like, oh, you ruined Star Wars for me because, you know, you killed off Luke Skywalker.
He's not dead, folks.
Well, technically, he ascended to, you know, he became a Force ghost. But here's the thing. I absolutely loved the story arc. And the reason why is because I thought it showed so much more depth to Luke's character than was ever in any of the other Star Wars films. If you think about it, in the other Star Wars films, he's a very plain character. You know, he's the farm boy that, you know, just doesn't know what's going on. You know, he has all these delusions of grandeur and, you know, obviously he wants to be a Jedi.
He's very naive.
But he's very naive. This Luke has seen some shit. You know what I'm saying?
And that's what people don't get. They're like, well, this isn't my Luke. No, because he isn't your Luke anymore.
Right.
He's gone through a lot of stuff. And yeah, for a little while, he gave up.
Yeah.
You know what? We've all been to dark places before, and he obviously went to a very dark place.
Now, I do agree with Mark Hamill where, in a sense, it is very out of character for Luke to be that kind of despondent where he doesn't even want to help Rey. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And I do agree in the sense that I think they went a little too far with the darkness side of Luke, and I think that I can understand grates on a bit on the fans, but for the most part, I believe that the whole entire arc itself was perfect. I love the way it wrapped up with Luke just basically schooling Kylo on the power of the Force and the ways of the Force.
That was extremely badass.
And then we learned from Yoda that when they say the whole line of, you know, strike me down and I'll become more powerful than you ever imagine, until this point,
we didn't understand what that meant.
And the reason is because all we'd ever seen them do is pop up as Force ghosts and tell them to go to Dagobah, right?
Exactly.
You know? But thanks to Yoda's visit, we saw him control weather. We saw him physically manifest and touch Luke. Remember that scene where he's tapping Luke on the head with a stick?
Exactly. He had a stick. Where'd the stick come from?
Yeah, from his Force ghost, right? I mean, so it's
right?
Like...
And the fact that he could still affect the physical realm.
Yes.
Tells us so much about, you know, what happens to a Jedi.
Yeah, and it basically...
When they ascend.
Yeah, and it basically shows you that even though Luke is gone, he is still going to be a major, major factor in the next episode.
Yeah, I am totally convinced that he will be back in the next film.
Yeah. I'd be surprised if he wasn't. Let me put it that way. So, obviously, we've talked a little bit about some of the controversies. What did you really enjoy from this movie?
There's a lot that I enjoyed from the movie. I love that in the first film, Poe Dameron was pictured as this, you know, intergalactic hero.
Mm-hmm.
And he was taken down a peg or two
mm-hmm.
in this film. Because he's not really a hero, as he's kind of really reckless.
He's reckless, and basically they made him to look like a bit of an idiot.
And I totally get that. He kind of reminds me of Han Solo a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he can be... what's the word I'm looking for? That he can be very hot-headed.
Mm-hmm.
And think that...
And impulsive.
Yes, exactly. That he's impulsive. Kind of like Han Solo is.
Mm-hmm.
But his impulsiveness, because he is so in with the Rebel Legion, that's going to cause a lot of problems.
But at the same time, I think Leia has been trying to groom him to become that leader.
Yeah.
Because when Leia's not going to be available to lead them, she wanted the next generation of leaders to be able to fight the First Order and whatever comes after the First Order if they happen to win.
It's so funny because while we were watching the film, while Leia was unconscious and Poe decided he was going to take matters into his own hands, we thought she was going to be the one coming to his rescue and support him.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't work out that way.
Instead, she took him out.
Yeah, she took him out. It didn't work out the way he had thought it was going to work
yes.
out.
Yes. In fact, the line from Luke, "This isn't going to go the way you think,"
exactly.
applies to Poe as much as it applies to Rey.
It does. Now, let's talk about Rey, because we haven't even talked about Rey
right.
at all. This was definitely her Empire Strikes Back episode, mm-hmm. you know, trying to learn how to use the Force.
And man, did they pay homage to Return of the Jedi and to Empire. I mean, because there are scenes taken directly from Return of the Jedi, you know?
Yeah, when she comes in front of Snoke,
of
for
Snoke,
example.
Exactly.
I mean, come on.
I mean, that whole scene was basically a recreation of what happened in Return of the Jedi, but they just changed it all around.
And another thing that was interesting was how she was trying to find out exactly what had happened in the Jedi training
mm-hmm.
camp. How there are literally two sides to the story.
Mm-hmm. And both of them are right.
Exactly.
Yep.
Now, I was actually liking Kylo Ren a little bit more in this film towards the beginning and middle of the film. But...
Well, there was that scene when he does what he does to Snoke, and then, you know, the entire theater just started applauding.
Yeah, you're like, all right,
yes.
I love Kylo!
No, he still sucks.
Yeah, he's still evil and he still yes. wants to take over the universe and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
He just wanted to take out Snoke.
Yes.
Because she's like, okay, he's dead now. Let's go take care of, you know, save the rebels. He's like,
yeah, I'm not on your side, honey, but you can join me if you want.
And he wants her to join him so desperately.
Yeah.
Here's another thing. He swore to her that she wasn't special, that her parents were nobodies.
Bullcrap.
Bullcrap, he is lying
Bull
through his
crap.
Teeth. Because he wanted her to feel like she was nothing. And remember
that way
his...
he can control her.
Remember his line saying, "You're not special, but you're special to me."
Right.
Bullcrap.
Yeah. And that was just a manipulative way to try to control her.
And I'm so glad she did not fall for
yep.
it.
Yep. And the... The one thing I wonder, though, is... So, Snoke allegedly put Rey and Kylo connected, right? He claimed that he connected them together. But do you think maybe he was full of crap himself?
I think so. I think there is a connection between the two of them, and I think it's because they're family. They're related.
Right. Either brother and sister or cousins.
It's possible that Snoke made that connection initially, but they're the ones who strengthened it through the Force.
Right.
But that's just my thoughts on that.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. I think Snoke told Kylo a lot of crap that he wanted to hear so that he could manipulate and control Kylo the same way that Kylo was trying to manipulate and control Rey.
I agreed. So as far as character development, she still has a lot to learn.
Yeah. And it was interesting. Another one of the big complaints that came about was that, you know, Rey spends 5 minutes with Luke Skywalker and now she's moving rocks and force wielding like a Jedi master.
Well, there's a reason why the first film was called The Force Awakens. Mm-hmm. The Force within her and within Kylo is stronger than anybody has ever seen before. Yeah. That's the whole point.
Yeah, Luke even said it.
Exactly, and it terrifies him.
Yep. And it may even be stronger than Luke himself. And Luke demonstrated how powerful the Force was, and Kylo isn't even anywhere near that yet.
No, not at all. All right, so let's talk about a character we haven't spoken about yet. Poor, poor General Hux.
I hate Hux. I loved every second of him getting his butt kicked all over the
place. They really made him look the fool in this film.
Yeah. And that whole scene when Snoke's like dragging him around the floor, that was awesome.
Yeah. it kind of reminded me of the Hulk scene where he's, you know, flipping Loki all back and forth.
Yeah.
I just felt like he was a ragdoll in this film.
Yeah. But Hux did get a bit of a moment where, you know, Kylo's knocked out on the floor and he's reaching for his gun. And then all of a sudden, I guess you're the boss now.
Yeah. Phasma, of course, she wasn't in the film for all that long.
Phasma, you know, for somebody that is promoted as much as Phasma is, she's the Boba Fett of the new Star Wars series.
Yeah.
Because Boba Fett wasn't in the original Star Wars series.
Yeah, he's a very popular character.
He's a very popular character. You see his toys all over the place. Phasma's exactly the same way, if you really think about it. She's hardly in The Force Awakens, and she's hardly in this movie, and now she's gone. And it's kind of odd that they focus so much on the marketing on her, you know, with the chrome
when
uniform
she's not even
and everything.
In the film that long.
When she's not even really in it all that much, and she's not really that big of a character.
That's true. But let's talk about another female character. What about Vice Admiral Hodo?
Hodo, that's the lady's name I was trying to remember, yeah.
She was brilliant.
And I gotta hand it to Rian Johnson on that particular character, because the way that he wrote the character, it was leading you down the path of what you thought she was going to be, and then they did the nice twist to where she wasn't that. And I thought that was very good writing. In a way, you can kind of see that it could go that way, but he hit it well, I thought, in some of the actions that she was doing.
What I like
in that it actually got it dissuaded you from seeing where she was actually going to end up being the hero.
Yeah, what I liked about her character is that she recognized Poe as being that reckless hothead,
mm-hmm.
and she did not feel that she needed to, you know, inform him of what her plans were, because at the end of the day, it wasn't any of his business.
Right. I mean, he is a lower ranking officer, you know, and she
had every right
to keep him in the dark, because, you know, he was on a need to know basis and he didn't need to know.
Exactly. Okay, so let's talk about one more thing. What is up with the Porg madness?
You know,
it's everything Porg right now.
Porgs are basically this generation's Ewoks. That's basically what it boils down to. You know, when Return of the Jedi came out, everybody loved the Ewoks. There was freaking Ewok TV shows and Ewok cartoons. And I guarantee you...
There were the standalone movies.
There are standalone Ewok films. There's probably going to be a Porg film. And you know, they're thankfully they're not as annoying as Jar Jar Binks was, but they're still there for the kids to laugh and giggle. And you know, the whole scene with Chewbacca where he's eating the porg and
about to eat the porg, and then you got the porg giving the pouty face, and he's like, "Okay, fine, I won't eat this."
Yeah, there goes my dinner. Damn it! But yeah, so it was just. It's there for the kids, you know, and it's there to sell merchandise. And the interesting thing about the porgs is there's a very Star Trek element to the porgs.
Like Tribbles.
They're totally like Tribbles. I mean, even with the scene when they're all over the Falcon and they're eating wires and there's a porg that's like giving birth to other porgs. And, you know, I mean, it's totally Tribbles.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So... what do you rate Star Wars The Last Jedi?
Oh, I rated a 10.
You rated a 10?
Yeah. Well, I don't know about those people who are going on Rotten Tomatoes and bashing it. I'm like, I'm sorry, you guys are not true Star Wars fans.
For me, I love the film. I thought Rogue One was a better film. I will say that. I enjoyed Rogue One a lot more than I enjoyed The Last Jedi. Or The Force Awakens, for that matter. At first, when I first watched it, I thought Force Awakens was a little bit better of a film. But after we watched it the second time, I do like The Last Jedi more than The Force Awakens.
Yes, I agree.
And for me, The Force Awakens was one of the top Star Wars movies. If you were to list the six Star Wars movies, and no, I don't include the prequels. I'm sorry. So they're not Star Wars movies. So the six Star Wars movies.
Which includes Rogue One.
Well, then that makes it seven. So... No, right, six.
Because the next episode's not out yet.
Right, the next episode's not out yet. So, of the six Star Wars films, I ranked The Force Awakens right after Empire Strikes Back. Empire Strikes Back is my number one. And then The Force Awakens was number two. So, if I liked The Last Jedi better than The Force Awakens, obviously that makes it number two. And The Force Awakens falls to number three, and then comes the original Star Wars, and then Return of the Jedi, and then there you go.
Okay.
Oh, wait. Well, Rogue One's in there, too. I forgot about Rogue One. So Rogue One is actually my number two. And then The Force... Then
now you're just confusing
people. All right. Empire, Rogue One, The Last Jedi, Force Awakens, Star Wars, Return of the Jedi.
Okay.
I think I got it. How about you?
Fine.
How about you?
What?
What's your list?
I agree with yours. I don't want to confuse our fans anymore.
I confuse myself. Okay, folks, coming up next, we talk Doctor Who.
Ooh-wee-oo. Ooh.
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 What are we doing?
I don't know. I mean, are we really adventurers? I'm not exactly Harrison Ford.
I think we should do it.
I've learned about you from a mutual acquaintance and have ascertained that your adventure spirit can continue where I left off. Enclosed in the suitcase is all you need to begin your journey, your servant. This looks really old.
Well, what you have here, Rita, is a stone tablet with ancient Sumerian inscription. This word right here, if I didn't know better, it was Atlantis.
Atlantis? As in the lost continent? I mean, that's just fiction.
Do you happen to be an archaeologist?
That depends.
On what?
On if Indiana Jeb here's got something else to wear.
Hey.
I mean, come on, really?
The reason we're here is because the tablet said we would find the key to Solok in the Cave of the Protected.
Cave of the Protected?
Yeah, it's somewhere here on Kauai, in the deepest part of the jungle, in fact.
The private journal of Captain Barnaby H. McIntosh, privateer and adventurer.
This journal reads like a fantasy novel.
So what have you found so far?
It's hard to read, but McIntosh is talking about someone trying to gain access to Atlantis.
Clarice?
The portal to Atlantis was sealed to protect it from Clarius.
But why? I mean, who is this guy?
Another trap. What is it? Spores. Toxic spores. Hit the ground. We gotta go. Move, move.
It's a cryptex, like Da Vinci Code.
Oh my.
Is that real? Hey, shouldn't we be in like a map room or something?
There's a red mark. Is that pointing to the Bahamas? Into some dry clothes.
Hey, did you bring a hair dryer or a fan?
I think Sarah has one.
Do you have one?
Yeah, like...
No, I don't.
You're prepared.
Worst adventure ever.
You got your flat on you.
Hello, this is Nick Briggs, the voice of the Daleks, and you're listening to Transmissions from Atlantis. And I urge you to listen, or you will be exterminated!
Laugh hard!
Run fast.
Be kind. Doctor. I let you go.
Spoilers!
Okay, folks, so you know that sound. It's time for Doctor Who! Ooh-you?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay. Anywho, so, the Christmas episode. Thoughts?
I thought it was a great out for Peter Capaldi. I think they did Matt such an injustice when they didn't really give him a true regeneration. It was like, bam! And it was done. But Peter had the full before he turned into somebody.
And not only that, Time of the Doctor is such a crappy episode. I mean, I'm sorry. The Town Called Christmas and...
That was the only Christmas-related thing. It just happened the town was called Christmas. That was it.
And you know, the whole... Well, if you really think about it, there wasn't much Christmas in this particular episode until like the last 10 minutes.
That is
true. But the point being, I understand it was kind of like a where are they now kind of throwback to all of Matt's enemies, where you had the Daleks and you had the Weeping Angels and you had all the different foes that Matt had faced during his run as the Doctor. I just saw it as, I don't know, it was very, very contrived. And I really loved what they did with Peter's Doctor. The whole story in general with him talking with the First Doctor and talking about regeneration, and then this whole concept of in millions of years in the future that we're going to be so advanced that people can have their memories saved and uploaded into this database.
The testimony.
The testimony, yeah. And I thought that whole concept was interesting. And the best line of the entire episode was when Peter's Doctor is like, so this isn't evil. I don't know what to do with that. You know, because he can't fight them because they're not evil. He can't defeat them. They're not evil.
No, I get that he was trying to save the soldier, but the soldier is going to die because that's, you know, his fixed moment in time. The testimony aren't there to destroy him. They're there to
document it.
To document it and save this guy's memories.
Exactly.
So Bill comes back.
I wasn't too crazy about that.
Yeah, to me, this is like, you know, when Clara came back after she had supposedly died.
Oh, don't get me started on that.
Yeah, I know. But the whole point is that we already saw Bill leave. You know, she became something else and she left with the star-eyed girl.
Yep.
So the fact that she came back and it wasn't really her, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like they were just putting her in there to put her in there.
Yeah. And of course, Clara had to come back again.
Thankfully, it was just briefly.
It was very brief, and I was somewhat okay with that. You know, I think it would have been a disservice to Peter's Doctor if Clara didn't show up. She kind of had to be there. But thankfully, it was only there for a minute, and I got to tell you, I read the Twitter reaction to Clara coming back. Oh my gosh. If you have kids, you don't want to read those in front of the kids because there was so many F Claras and go to hell Claras, and it was very embarrassing.
I do feel bad for Bill's character though, because she like Donna is only getting one season and that's it. She's not coming back.
And I like Bill.
I did too.
Bill was a good companion.
And at least Nardole came back briefly too. Now, he's a character I really wish would have stayed.
Yeah. I really enjoyed Nardole's character. I thought there was more to tell in his story as to, you know, why he was put back together. And
yeah, you still think that he's River Song.
Not anymore.
Okay.
Not anymore. That was my working theory before, for those of you that are watching us on YouTube for the first time, that Nardole was actually River Song, but yeah, that didn't exactly work out that way, but in a sense, I liked the whole storyline of Nardole coming back. It was brief, it was poignant, and it kind of illustrated the point of the testimony and that everybody's in there.
Yeah.
Except maybe the Doctor, because, you know, maybe the Doctor's never going to die, so...
Well, it's possible he's in there somewhere, too.
Yeah. See, that would have been interesting if they started bringing in doctors. You know, because when you regenerate, does the Doctor really die? Does his soul go away, or does it just kind of change as he's regenerating?
That's always been theorized, that when he regenerates, he's actually going through a real death.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was one of the things I really didn't like about Tennant's regeneration. You know, as much as we loved, you know, him going back to see all his old companions and, you know, all the years and all the episodes that Tennant did, and he had kind of like the reunion tour before he regenerated, right? Yeah. Russell T. Davies treated that regeneration like a death. And, like, this Doctor is dying and the new Doctor is going to have to come in and, you know, he's just going to be this completely different guy and he's not really the Doctor anymore.
Well,
and I think that was one of the things that Moffat was trying to fix with Matt's regeneration. When Matt regenerated into Capaldi, that was the whole reason for Matt calling Clara and saying, hey, you know, what you're looking at is me, that kind of whole thing. And I think Moffat finally got it right with Capaldi.
And I think Moffat knows that.
Yeah.
He understood afterwards that what he did with Matt wasn't the way to go.
Right. I mean, you understood it because Peter was such a different doctor than Matt that you actually, it was going to be a huge culture shock for a lot of the fans who fell in love with Matt and his goofiness, and Peter was definitely not going to be that. You know, Peter was goofy in his own way, but he wasn't going to be goofy like Matt was goofy.
No.
Yeah.
Peter Capaldi's doctor was definitely a little bit more darker.
Yeah.
Than Matt Smith's.
And so let's talk a little bit about Peter's run as the Doctor. Before the Christmas episode, Reed and I actually rewatched all of Capaldi's run, except for Kill the Moon and the
Arbor Day episode.
The Arbor Day episode, because I just refused to watch those episodes. But other than those two episodes, we watched basically every other episode of his run. And I gotta say, Peter was one of the best Doctors of the new era.
I have to agree with you. He was definitely very brilliant. And like I said, he was a little bit darker, while at the same time, he still had that goofiness to him. For example, one of my favorite episodes was The Mummy on the Orient Express. Mm-hmm. You know, especially towards the end of the film, towards the end of the episode, where he takes it onto himself so that he can see the mummy. It's like, sometimes he can come off as so callous, but at the end of it, there was a reason for it.
Right. For me, one of my favorite episodes was Listen.
Because
that episode had just the right amount of creepiness, just the right amount of mystery, and then just the right amount of Doctor Who mysticism, you know, with Gallifrey and everything else. I just absolutely love that episode.
And it's funny if you think about it, because that episode didn't really have a monster.
No.
To be defeated.
Or did it? We don't know. We don't know.
There was that thing in the room, but we don't know what it was.
Yep. Was it all in their minds? You know, like, for example, when they were in the station at the end of the universe, right? And you were hearing that knocking, and he would give you the explanation, the plausible explanation, and then give you the, what, it could be somebody outside. You know, that was just brilliant writing. That was just brilliant writing, and the way that Capaldi played that was just fantastic.
Now, I think the earlier season of his,
Series 9 was his best.
Yeah, Series 9 was his best, even though Series 10 was also very good.
It was okay. It was pretty good.
Series 8...
Terrible.
It was terrible, and terrible. I don't think it was him.
No,
it was
not at all.
The writing was just not great.
The writing was very poor. Very, very poor. And it was a very big disappointment because, you know, Peter was giving some tremendous performances, but unfortunately, the writing was really letting him down, and he did the best he could. And the whole Clara storyline with her being a liar and wanting to leave the Doctor and lying to Danny Pink, and the whole Danny Pink storyline just kind of fell flat, and it was just a not a very good season.
I mean, you do something like in Listen where you reach the end of the universe, and there is Pink.
Orson Pink, yes.
Yeah, right? Orson Pink. Hello? Play with that.
Yeah.
Don't just throw it to the wayside and then kill Danny Pink. That just made no sense to me.
No sense at all. And the funny thing about that first season was there were some good moments. It introduced Missy as the Master.
Yes.
Even though those particular two episodes weren't the greatest, but there were some elements in there that were interesting, like the return of the Brig as a Cyberman, that kind of thing. There was, of course, Missy killing Osgood, which pissed everybody off. But in the next season, they kind of corrected that in saying that, you know, it wasn't really Osgood. It was the Zygon Osgood.
Even though they never did state one word.
It was the Zygon Osgood because, number one, a Zygon cannot duplicate another Zygon. That's just stupid. So
that is true.
Yeah, so it's obviously she's still around. So, even though she doesn't want to admit it. But that's neither here nor there. The point of it is that, you know, there were some good pieces in Series 8, but it just never came together. In Series 9, it completely came together. It was an awesome season.
There was a lot of two-parters in Series 9.
Yeah, it introduced rock and roll doctor, you know, Peter's doctor as being the, you know, 60s rocker.
It also
rocker.
Introduced Ashilda, who became a huge part of that yeah. series.
Madame Me, for me, was a love-hate kind of relationship. I really liked her character. But then she started to grate on me a little bit. And I thought Clara's death was absolutely pointless. You know, it was the dumbest death on Doctor Who since Adric, personally.
And then bringing her back.
As much as I disliked Clara as a character, and I'll be honest with you, I loved Clara as the Impossible Girl. I was a huge Clara fan. And then the whole Clara Danny Pink thing completely turned me off on Clara. I was ready for her to leave. So I was not unhappy when Clara left. I was very displeased with the way they killed her off, because it was just the dumbest, stupidest way to kill off a character. And somebody as important as the Impossible Girl, Clara, right? And for me, I thought that was a disservice. But it set up the very best episode of Capaldi's run. And I think everybody kind of agrees with that. And that was the episode where he's stuck in the confession.
In the confession dial and reliving the same moments over and over again.
Millions and millions of years.
Yeah, billions actually,
yeah,
if
billions,
I remember.
Yeah.
That was the most brilliant episode in Capaldi's
run,
period.
Absolutely. And, you know, as much as I love Listen, that episode right there, it just showed you how brilliant of an actor and a doctor that Capaldi was.
And then they had to ruin it in the next episode.
I don't think they really ruined it. I mean, I still like the whole Gallifrey episode, but
until we get to the end.
Yeah. And then
and they bring back Clara.
The diner at the end of the world, kind of, yeah.
Me. Yeah.
Damn, Clara. Now, anyway. But yeah, so in Series 10, I thought it was a good season too. But I mean, there were some hits and misses, obviously, in that particular series. Yeah. Not as bad as 8, mind you.
Well, the only episodes that I disliked was the 3-part mummy monk thing.
The monk thing, which it started off very well. That first episode was actually pretty good. What was it, Eaters of the Dead, or whatever the heck it was called? Or was that the second one? I don't remember.
Eaters of the Dead was, I think, the second one. The first one was when they were at the Vatican.
Right. That was actually kind of interesting. And it intrigued you into the next episode. Second episode was terrible. Third episode was even worse.
Third episode was like, what?
Yeah. And okay. So...
Yeah.
So that kind of soured Series 10 a little bit for me.
But it was still a lot better than 8.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't as bad as 8. The middle part struggled a little bit, but then as you moved on towards the end, it got really, really good.
Now, let's move on. We've talked about Peter Capaldi's era. Next up, let's talk about Stephen Moffat's era.
Yeah.
Because everything from Matt Smith to Peter Capaldi was Moffat. Now, yep. Mind you, Moffat also wrote episodes.
For Tennant and for the Ninth Doctor.
Yes.
Well.
Yep. Like, for example...
Blink is his.
Yes, Blink is his. Girl in the Fireplace was his.
Yep.
Also, The Empty Child, Doctor Dances, The Silence in the Library episodes were his. Some of our all-time favorite episodes in the 9th and 10th Doctor series belong to Moffat.
And if you really, really think about it, as much crap as Moffat has gotten, he really has shaped what we see Doctor Who is today. You know, if you really think about it, because some of the best episodes under Russell T. Davies' run were Moffat episodes. He gave us the idea of the Madman in a Box. You know, he gave us River Song. You know, he gave us the Weeping Angels, one of the greatest villains in Doctor Who history. You know, he gave us so many moments that you just will never forget and are integral to Doctor Who now. Moffat is one of the best things to ever happen to Doctor Who. I know it's going to drive a lot of Doctor Who fans crazy that I said that, because everybody's like, Moffat! But...
And there's a lot of things that he's done that has driven us crazy.
Of course.
The whole Clara Oswald line at the beginning. First we had the souffle girl. Then we had the governess.
Yeah.
And after the governess, that's when people really were Moffat, because it's like, okay,
well, because
come on
the governess was the best version of Clara, you know, if you really want to.
Completely. I agree. Yeah.
And of course, there was the Husbands of River, or not the Husbands of River Song, but the Wedding of River Song, where it could have been done so much better. But then you had that weird kind of situation where Alex Kingston's character, River Song, Alex is older than both Karen and Arthur, but she's their daughter. And it was a time baby, and somehow she has regeneration powers because she was born in the vortex. And how does that actually...
Conceived in the vortex.
She was conceived in the vortex. And so how does that kind of...
we're going to bake you a Time Lord.
Yeah, we're baking you a Time Lord in a TARDIS.
think that's the way Time Lords are made.
It didn't seem right, right?
No.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't seem like that's the way it should be, but...
Yeah, there were some weird story arcs.
And the whole Almost People story arc where, you know, you have the plastic people or whatever the heck they were.
Oh, yes, I remember those. I hate that two-part.
And then it was the perfect solution to the end of that season when Matt's doctor supposedly is killed and has to be regenerated.
Right, you just create an Almost People of him. You had a duplicate of him in that two-parter.
But do you do that?
No! You find the robot with the little teeny tiny mini people in it.
What the hell was the point of that? And by the way, the Telemesca... Doesn't that kind of, or a tele, whatever the hell it was. I don't remember. I think it was the Telemesco or whatever the heck it was.
I don't remember.
Anyway, isn't the whole concept of the testimony kind of the same thing as the Telemesca pulling people out and punishing them? You know, like Hitler. You know,
well, testimony is just saving people's memories, while the other one is actually killing people. Pulling them out and punishing them.
You know, giving them like 100 years of hell. Before putting him back before their death, right?
Yeah, that, okay.
But I guess we're digressing a little bit. But the point of it is, though, you know, there's was good parts with Moffat's run. There was bad parts with Moffat's run. But nobody will ever forget Stephen Moffat's impact on Doctor Who.
No, because he had quite an impact.
Yep. And let's face it, Stephen was a huge fan of Doctor Who. Is Chris Chibnall... I've never really heard him describe himself as a rabid Doctor Who fan. I think you kind of have to be to do this job. So I'm assuming that he loves Doctor Who, but I guess we'll find out, right?
Yeah. Now, we have one more person that is dropping down after this, you know, Christmas episode, and that's Murray Gold. Now, Murray Gold is the composer for the Doctor Who series. And let me tell you, I absolutely loved the soundtrack for this latest Christmas episode, because it was like a greatest hits album from Murray Gold.
Yep. He definitely revisited a lot of the old favorites. And Murray Gold, just like Stephen Moffat, has left such an impact on Doctor Who. His compositions, the music that accompanied some of the most poignant scenes in Doctor Who, the David Tennant regeneration... I mean, that became the regeneration tune for all time, right?
Well, yes, and one of my favorite musical pieces that he created was for the Impossible Planet two-parter.
Mm.
That was such a very haunting melody.
Yeah.
It is one of my favorites.
And that's the one amazing thing about Murray Gold, is that his music always seemed to... invoke the right feelings.
Yes.
You know, like that one episode, I forget what the name was, but it was the one episode where the sun was like alive and it was in possessing people, and the guy would walk around and be like, "Burn with me."
Oh, you're talking about 42.
42, yeah. And that particular, the music that accompanied that episode was just such a compliment to each, the tension and the scariness that you feel in those scenes.
Well, think again,
and the same
to,
thing with An Impossible Planet.
Well, think again to the Listen episode, mm-hmm. or even Hyde, for example.
Right. Yeah,
it has that creepiness factor to
it. And of course, some of the most beautiful music that he's ever done has been in the Christmas episodes, like the Christmas Carol episode.
Oh, I love the music for the Christmas Carol.
Just beautiful. Just absolutely beautiful. So I'm really going to miss Murray Gold's work. It's going to be interesting to see if the new person that comes in is going to be like Murray Light, or if he's going to take it a whole different direction. But...
As long as we keep the wee-oo, then we're good.
Well, of course. But this was one of the bigger losses, I think, in Doctor Who, was losing Murray Gold as a composer. Now, we've talked a lot about Peter. We've talked about Stephen. We've talked about Murray. We've talked about the Christmas episode. The one thing we haven't talked about is Jodie Whittaker.
That's right. Jodie Whittaker made her first appearance at the end of the Christmas episode. And already, you know, I've already seen people, oh, why does it have to be a female, blah, blah, blah. You know what? Change is inevitable.
Get over it, people. Get over it. Get over it. It's done. Get over it.
She's here. She's going to be brilliant. Mm-hmm. And you know what? By the end of it, you're probably going to be like, I don't want her to go.
Yes. And that's the way it always is whenever a doctor regenerates, is you hate the, you love the current doctor, you hate that person's leaving, and you dislike the new person. They're totally different than the old doctor. This person can't possibly be the doctor. And by the end of her run, you're not going to want her to leave either. That's just the way that Doctor Who works. It's always been that way.
I think the only thing I was disappointed with in regards to her regeneration is that she didn't say, not Ginger.
Yeah. Her only line of the whole thing was, oh, brilliant. Yeah, so it's like...
But you know what? When they all regenerate, they usually have, you know, one little line. Mm-hmm.
And it'll be interesting to see if brilliant is her catchphrase for her whole run. You know, it'll be interesting to see that. Of course, Capaldi's catchphrase was not kidneys.
Yeah. Oh, I think oh, brilliant is better than kidneys.
Kidneys?
I don't like the color.
Of your kidneys. Sorry. But yeah, so it was interesting to see the TARDIS kick her out of the TARDIS.
Yeah, it was like, what? Oh, she's like falling and falling.
I have a theory on that.
Yeah?
I have a theory on that. I think that Capaldi's doctor put some kind of failsafe for female Time Lords because Missy was traveling with them. And I think that to protect the TARDIS from Missy...
You think the TARDIS accidentally dumped her out thinking it was Missy?
Right, because the Doctor's never been female before, so if...
Maybe the TARDIS is no!
If the Doctor put a protocol in saying if a female Time Lord tries to take over the TARDIS and leaves without me in it, you know, then, you know, do what it did, you know, blow up and kick her out.
Yeah. We'll have to see about that. Yeah. That seems a little outlandish because we've seen Missy fly the TARDIS on her own before.
With Nardal or with somebody else always with her, but never by herself.
Well, we've also seen Tasha Lamb, you know, fly the TARDIS by herself.
But that I'm not talking about that it's always been there. I'm saying like in the last few episodes when Missy was traveling with the Doctor, the Doctor would have been smart enough to put something to protect himself just in case Missy turned evil.
Or the TARDIS could just be freaking out after, you know, getting an explosive reaction from that, you know, regeneration.
Yeah.
Hey, future doctors,
maybe don't regenerate in the TARDIS anymore
because every time you do it, you blow up the whole damn TARDIS.
And I think it's time for a new desktop. I loved Peter's desktop, but if you think about it, he never really had a new desktop because that was also Matt's desktop.
Yeah, it was just a little bit adjustment from Matt's desktop. But I think the whole blowing up of the TARDIS console room was...
That's been done.
Well, not only has it been done, but what I'm saying is that that was basically the excuse to create a new desktop.
Of course.
So yeah, that's going to happen for sure. Jodie will have her own desktop. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what they come up with. I'm always hoping that they have something similar to the Eighth Doctor's TARDIS console room, where it was just absolutely beautiful and brilliant. So I'll still hold out hope that they'll kind of go that route, but I did like the new techie look of the TARDIS during Matt's later run and Peter's run. I thought it was cool. It looked better, a lot better than the coral, you know, grunge look.
Yeah. So, of course, we're going to have a lot more news coming out for Doctor Who soon.
Yep.
The next season won't be starting until August, right?
August, but it is filming now, so we're seeing pictures and all kinds of craziness. And, of course, we've all seen Jodie's new Doctor Who outfit. It'll be interesting to see if she has other outfits, because if she's a female Time Lord, she's got the perfect excuse to wear different things, including dresses, and I cannot wait to see all the cosplay.
Because
the cosplayers are going to be going insane with a female doctor. Because they don't have to do Femme Doctor anymore. Now it's the Doctor. So I think it's going to be brilliant.
Agreed.
To steal a line from Jodie's Doctor. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this episode of Transmissions from Atlantis. For those of you joining us on YouTube and Vimeo, we hope you enjoyed our new format.
And for our regular listeners, we thank you for listening and hope you'll check out the video version of the podcast.
In our next episode, we'll be reviewing The Return of the X-Files, and we'll also be talking about The Alienist, the new psychological thriller from TNT featuring Luke Evans and a very grown-up Dakota Fanning. Until then, allons-y.
Allons-y.
Goodbye, everybody.
Look sharp, Rose Tyler, allons-y. And then, it'd be really brilliant if I met someone called Alonzo, because then I could say allons-y, Alonzo, every time.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.